Crab Shack Willies, The Gooey Girl, and Foot Models. That's right, Foot Models. This episode of I Heard It Both Ways starts right about now.
I've heard it both ways.
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 And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe. With me, as always, riding shotgun in the blueberries, my partner in crime, Razorblade Suitcase.
That's Razor. Really good.
How's it going?
I've been carrying a lot of suitcases around the last few days, but it's good to be back here in New England and here to discuss. It's one of the great. It's up there as like a top second tier, third tier all time psych episode, maybe.
Yeah, so it's funny. I think you have this a little bit higher than I do, because for me, and by the way, so we're talking Psych Season 2, Episode 15, Black and Tan, A Crime of Fashion. And this was an episode for me that I've always sort of held in fairly high regard. And then maybe it was the mood I've been in, I don't know, but I'm like, you know what? It slipped a little bit for me. Just a touch. Not a ton, but
to me it held water. To me it was the exact same as I always remembered it. It wasn't laugh a minute, but I really liked everything about it.
Yeah, it was. Don't get me wrong. It's another great episode, but I was like, you know what? There's like the standout stuff in this episode doesn't carry the same weight as some of the other episodes, and I think part of that is that like the highs of season two have been really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
And while the lows haven't been like tremendously low, it's like, okay, it takes a little extra oomph, right? To, you know, get into that territory as some of these other episodes. But before we dive any deeper, my friend, let's go over the process for the people.
Well, of course, it starts with a holla, ends with a cream skull. And if there's time in between, a little Thundercats.
Ho!
Uh-oh.
So... yeah, it did drop just a little bit for him because what I realized is that not only is this like the fourth or fifth episode in a row now we've had someone on the inside, but you know, for me it was a lot of the secondary characters that really sort of stole the show. You know, like Sean was Sean and Gus was Gus, but it was. And you know, little tease, you know, for the creamsicle or the Thundercats. Oh, I can't remember where it falls, but my favorite character of the episode was one of the secondary characters. So that I think just brought it down just a touch, not a ton. Still really love it. But where would you sort of rank it in the pantheon of season two so far?
Probably, as we say, the meaty part of the curve, probably ahead, like just in that lower tier. So like if, you know, the bad episodes, let me pull up my list here of season two real quick. It's definitely not in the top tier. Like we're going to put this in three tiers, if you will, to talk about psych. So we got American Duos. That's tippy top, right?
Yep.
65 million years off. Tippy top, I would say. Yep. So it's above Psych vs. Psych, which was episode 3. Zero Murder in 60 Seconds, I love. Down the Stretch Comes Murder, I love.
Yep.
I'd put it in the same ballpark as like Meat is Murder, and If You're So Smart, Then Why Are You Dead, Robbed by Baby, Bounty Hunters. It's in that area. It's not, there's something about Mira, The Old and the Restless, Lights, Camera, Act, Homicidio, or, you know. I'll be interested to see our thoughts on Sean Gus of the Dead. So... yeah. Because I feel like that has the same, like, I haven't really watched it a ton. I watched this episode probably legit 7 times today. I just had it on loop at like 1.5 speed, just blazing through it. And I don't know. There was something about it that I liked. Maybe I like, you know, models or I don't know what it is. But I think we might have the same favorite character. So we can talk about that when we get to that. But there was just something about it. Like it's like that middle meaty part of the curve.
Yeah, I would say it's probably for me the back end of that second tier, you know, not at the ass end of it, right? It's not like a border second, but it's towards the back of that. It's on the downslope of the ass end of the curve there, but not by much. I think you're right. I mean, I like Meat is Murder a little bit more than this, because in that one we get a lot of references and the montage in that was great, and But yeah, it's definitely better than some of those other ones you mentioned. So again, like not a huge downtick for me, but just a little. Mm-hmm. And so in this episode as well, we get not one, is my voice cracked? This is the second time this fucking week my voice is cracked on the goddamn show. We get two guest stars. And so one is the mousy assistant, which I think she's like, I think she was on, 2 and a Half Men. And
Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah, like she's got a face like you recognize. She's cute as a button, you know.
She's on Mom, which is, you know, everybody's on that right, show, yep. Apparently.
but the standout star for me, right, was her name is Amanda Pays, and she played Sue B.
Oh, Sue B. Sue B was dynamite. She turned into a carnivorous mix, if you will. Yeah. And she's really, again, like she's been in like Max Headroom, The Flash, nothing really like you would know. This is really all I've ever seen her in that I would know.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped watching WB's The Flash, I think, after like season 3, and I don't think she was on it at that point. I remember watching Nip Tuck, but that was a long time ago. That was a great little show. It got a little ridiculous at the end. And then like The X-Files, right? Obviously, I wouldn't have remembered her from that, but like she's got sort of like this Jane Seymour vibe to her, especially from what's the fucking movie there? Wedding Crashers. Mm-hmm. Right?
Kitty Cat. Oh yeah, definitely. Kitty
Cat. Right? Kitty Cat now, right? And so she goes from like, again, very mousy, very, how did Henry describe her? A nondescript.
Yeah, nondescript. Then, like, I've never heard anybody besides a bank suspect be described as that.
Right. She goes from nondescript to tease out for the boys, you know, real fast in this episode. So I had to pick her as a standout guest star because she brought it, man.
Well, that's the other thing too. Oh, 100% she brought it. About all of the people they cast, they were all kind of like just, you know, you look at their IMDb's, they were nothing. Like really, they have been like, you know, some TV episodes. No, they didn't really go for the home run actor like they have in the past few episodes with the guest star. So I didn't actually mind that because the blonde guy, the one who challenged him to a pillow fight, he was also one of my favorites.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah, I mean, like, there was no, like, you know, A-list, B-list, hell, even C-list level celebrity. No. But they did their jobs perfectly, like, all but once so far. You know, when they've got someone in to be a guest star, they've played the role perfectly, and they did that, you know, again here. So
Hassenpfeffer,
he was a fucking riot. So the case, in order to investigate the murders of both heads of a prestigious fashion house, Sean and Gus go undercover as models. And I think the best running gag throughout this entire episode, there was two of them that gave me a great chuckle. One was no one believing that Sean was a model.
Look at these cheekbones.
Yeah. And then Lassie, you know, just wearing the same suit.
The same tie. Yeah.
And the same tie.
Transient, just shivering in the night.
But that was a great, you know, a great gag because this is, we don't have fat Sean yet. So you still have skinny Sean who still has sort of somewhat defined facial features. And the way they dressed it, but it was hilarious. So the one thing that I disliked about this episode, we'll just jump into least favorable moments because it happens right here in the cold open. Was the cold open itself. It was lame.
Really?
I love the Knight Rider reference, but I mean it was just like Sean wants to wear his Knight Rider shirt and Henry just says, go put on your sweater vest. And that was like that was it. You know, like I don't know. It fell flat for me. Was it my favorite?
But okay, get you into the episode a little bit though, because they're going about fashion. So
yeah,
it picks up from there. I didn't mind it. You know, he wanted him to look nice. His mom picked out the sweater, so I didn't really mind that too much.
Yeah, well, again, it's just a little nitpicky thing. You know, if I was going to pick something, that was it. And if that's the worst thing, all right, then you know we're not doing half bad here. But
Doc just Mr. Negative today.
Hey, I got my kid down at 7:30 today. That's epic.
That's epic.
A tremendous feat. So I'm actually in and I got my little cranberry toques here, my little long drink. So, you know,
I got to try a long drink that's not 8%.
Yeah. The cranberry's good. The blue cans are the best, though. Just the regular toques. But anyway, so what was great about this episode is it was, you know, Gus. I didn't pick him as my favorite character, but he did a really good job here because it's his birthday and he steadfastly refuses to do anything psych related until the clock strikes midnight. So it's his day. And Sean actually goes above and beyond here for his birthday.
Oh yeah.
The best birthday gift ever by, you know, getting them into this fashion show party. It's like a launch party for some new line. And it's got Gus's favorite models in there. He gets him in.
The gooey girl.
He gets them in as the guys of black and tan. They're models.
They're retired models, okay?
Retired models.
And that is the best running gag, I think, in this entire episode, that Gus is tan and Sean is black. And how dare you make that assumption? Shame on you and your family. Like that. Yeah. That interaction with the doorman is, I think that's one of the things I love about this. Plus, I also love Sean's outfit because it's ridiculous. He's wearing a vest with a button-down shirt and a white T-shirt underneath. Like, you don't do that. Like, I haven't worn a white T-shirt underneath a button-down shirt since probably,
Middle school?
Yeah, that's not the look. I don't have much, but I got a little bit of a stern bush going on. So, rock it when you can and... Like, it's just such a bad look, and like, you know, and I think that's kind of a little bit of the thing. Gus, as we know, even in the flashbacks, is dressed in khaki pants and a nice shirt. but he does have a nice little vibe. He's got the pink shirt, you know, the striped jacket going on. But I just loved that opening scene and them getting in there.
Yeah, it was just great, and that leads to the other, you know, one of the other is that even the models are constantly getting them mixed up. Mm-hmm. Sean's constantly, no, I'm black. Right.
Oh yeah.
And you know, so I just that got me good. So they're in there, right? And Gus is just like, you know, now we're getting play of Gus, you know, and he sees the model that he's you know, obsessed with, and so he's just in his zone. He sees over the moon, and as he's doing his thing, the head of the fashion line, Gregor of Chalbera, he's up there. He's making an announcement, a proclamation, you know, that he designed this, you know, this new line that's coming out. And as he's talking, he appears to be electrocuted from the mic stand and the microphone and drops dead. And so at first glance, it seems like, you know, an accident, a short circuit there. But Sean isn't quite convinced and he's trying to get Gus like, hey, listen. And Gus is like, fuck your couch. It's my day. Don't talk to me about this.
And I know we've experienced this with some people that, you know, in our lives where their birthdays are the whole day, the whole week, the whole month for some people that I've known. Gus is a birthday guy and he's living in his birthday world. But we do get a little bit of a nugget here about the thing where he's like, since I've done all the designing, why don't I do some menial labor too? And lift up the microphone. So that's a nice little key piece that comes back later that they kind of drop in there. And it just seems douchey, but it's a nice little piece of evidence drop because obviously, you know, no spoilers here. If you're listening to this podcast, you've seen the show, you know, his wife, who's good with electronics, actually, or electrics, you know, did that, rigged the thing. So that was a nice little dump right there that I liked.
Yeah, and what I loved a lot about this episode in general is that there was a great okey-doke. You know, like, okay, the comedy was good. It wasn't a mile a minute. There wasn't a ton of references, but it was very solid. But the case that they gave you, you know, was, you know, in typical psych fashion, you had no idea right until the very end, and it made sense. And the red herrings that were used, the you know, everything about it, it just worked, you know, really well. And it was little things like this, right? Because, you know, the mic stand was set too low on purpose, so he'd have to grab it and, you know, zip, zap, and he drops dead. So, you know, this happens, you know, Lassie and Jules show up. Like, oh, of course you fucking guys are here, right? And then, scene cuts away. They go to Henry's. And I love why they're going back to Henry's because Sean is dropping off Henry's half boots.
Oh, that's fantastic that he would have those. Those are quite some boots, Henry. This is where we see the chief. This is a nice little moment between Sean and the chief where he thinks, like, his dad's getting busy with the chief. He's like, we didn't see anything.
Yeah, that was great.
Come in. this is my friend Susan, and she's like, she's so awkward in that moment. She's wearing a cardigan, and it's like, you know, I'm Sue. They call me Sue B down at the office because there's another Sue. That doesn't really apply here. Totally awkward. You know, I've had many of those encounters in my time now, dating in the, you know, late stages of my 30s here. So I can appreciate that woman's plight, even though I think Henry's probably in his 50s. But, you know, one day that'll probably be me. But I just love that whole scene because it's super awkward for Sean. You know, Henry made a cheese plate. She didn't even sample it. He's asking Sean for his opinion, but Sean's super uncomfortable by the idea of his dad dating. It's just a great little dive into their relationship and kind of sets up an arc from, you know, basically all of season three is a Henry Sean arc.
Yeah, and especially with the mother, right, coming back into the scene. Great casting there, too. But, it was great. It's like you cubed cheese and served her wieners. What did you expect, you know? And Henry being the flustered one for once. We're not used to really seeing that. And wanting to get advice from Sean, and Sean being like, no, this is really awkward for me, you know, and so that was great, you know, and we get some good character building between those two, you know, especially at the end of this episode, you know, that we'll get into in a little bit. But Sean really wants to, you know, investigate this case. And another good little nugget here is Chief Vic has to leave the soiree a little early because she gets a call from Jules, and you can hear Chief Vic over saying, what, the mic stand, you know, the mic was tampered with? Okay, I'll be right there. Mm-hmm. So Sean's, you know, radar, you know, pings, and he wants in. And Gus, this is probably, you know, the best line from the episode where Gus goes, I'm Cinderella, this is my ball, and I ain't lifting a finger until my big ass carriage turns into a pumpkin.
It's so good, and Gus delivers it so great. And Sean even points out there's 73 minutes, actually 72 minutes until the end of your birthday. But I love how sticklerish that Gus is. He's unfringingly rigid about the fact that he will not do anything work related. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, I've worked with people like this who like take their birthday off as a national freaking holiday. but I respect it. I respect it. I like Gus's thing. They really don't waste a lot of time. And it's just a nice little delve into Gus. I wish we kind of got another birthday Gus, but this is enough.
Yeah, it was enough. It was good. And what I love, too, is this scene doesn't really have much to do with the episode other than you get this. They're at an arcade, you know, sort of, you know, finishing off the last, you know, few moments of Gus's birthday. And they're just doing some Dance Dance Revolution.
I love when they play the air hockey.
Oh, yeah. But that was just a great little quick little cut scene. And then but what happens here is that the clock strikes midnight. Mm-hmm. And okay, Gus is now willing to listen. And so Sean kind of pleads his case, and then we're at the loft, and this is great because they're already, you know, under the guise of black and tan. So Sean uses that to get them to stay at the loft with the other models. Mm-hmm. And this is where we get that great scene where, you know, Gus is like, you know, I'm not going to stay here. Sean, there's nothing you can do to convince me to stay here. And then the gooey girl comes in. And nothing but a towel. And Gus is like, all right, I'm staying here. And then he's like ripping Sean. Like, please, look how fashionable I am. I own this. I own this.
I have this shirt. I have this shirt. I own most of these. I have these exact kind of Kohl's. And that's a picture of my mom parasailing in Montego Bay. Wait, what?
That is my favorite.
And the other thing that I love, too, is that he's like, help me set up my clapper. And then it comes back when Sean's all downtrodden later in the episode. And he's just like... and the lights go off. I don't know why, but I need a clapper. I just love that idea. And like the way they worked that in was so perfect. But like Gus is acting in the Montego Bay part of it where he's just like, I have this shirt, that shirt, most of these are my exact chemicals. And even this picture of my mom parasailing. Like that is just that cracked me up. And maybe this is why I love this so much. But I just it's not that I relate to this episode, but some of these jokes just hit me perfectly, I think.
Yeah, they were good. They're like I said, they weren't like
nothing. They were situational. So they weren't.
Situational is the best way to describe it because nothing was like side splittingly funny. No. But the situations in which the comedy was delivered, that was perfect. That was done really well. And what I loved here too, you know, is that Sean and Gus, you know, walking downstairs and the two other male models that are staying there trying to initiate them with a pillow fight. Yeah. And so Gus takes the pillow and he winds up and he swings like fucking Dante Bichette, you know, better yet, Vladimir Guerrero from the tips of his fucking toes, right? And just knocks this guy over the couch. It was just like, it was over exaggerated, but it was hilarious.
I watched this a couple times. They must have had this guy on legitimately like a green screen string because he flies up and over the couch like a superhero. It's amazing. Yeah. And once again, this is the black and tan thing coming into play because they're like, oh, pillow fight. You know, I got Tommy John, all that stuff. They're not going to do it. And then all of a sudden he calls Gus Black and he winds up and whacks him. And then Sean goes, it would really behoove you to learn our names. I love it. Love it.
It was great. And then, you know, so then one of the other models says, you know, hey, we're all going out to do some O2, which I find hysterical because my wife works when she would go into the office right downtown, right next to, you know, right sort of at the edge of Chinatown there, you know, as you're sort of heading towards the Public Garden there. And so pretty much like almost right across from where the W Hotel is. And so, like, she had won a free night stay in, like, a raffle. Mm-hmm. So we went there. We used it. We went and we stayed a night there. And in the fucking mini bar was a hit of oxygen.
Oh, yeah.
For, like, 30 bucks, whatever the fuck it was. I'm like, am I being charged right now for fucking breathing in this goddamn place? You know, but that just cracks me up every time. It's like, you know, it's like the perfect, like, the quintessential model thing to say. Like, oh, yeah. I think even The Simpsons, when Mo converted his bar, you know, for the upscale people, and they were all, you know, hitting oxygen, you know, in one of the rooms there. So that just, I don't know what it is. That just, you know, oh, we're going to go do some oxygen. Just,
I mean, there's a Parks and Rec episode where, you know, there's like a new type-ish bar where there's like Ron Swanson says, there's no wrong way to consume alcohol. And one of them is through like a CO2 type of like inhaling. He's like, this is the wrong way. right. So it is just a nice like delve into like higher life. And I will tell you, super brag here, but I have to say it. I went to the Yellowstone Club when I was in Montana, which basically you have to own a $5 million home and pay like $500,000 in like club fees to live in this community that has their own police department, fire station. I'll tell you what, it was, I might as well die. Like I'll never be in that. Like it was one of the most chilling experiences I've ever had in my life. It was weird. But like that is the type of level of like CO2 like inhaling.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was like they nailed it. They nailed all the little things. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting ready to go out to this bar. And I love this little scene here with all of them with the music playing. And they're strutting down, you know, the alley as they're, you know, heading towards the limo.
A song. And they use it now in like a car insurance commercial. Like, I've got the brains. You've got the money. Or no, you've got the whatever. Let's make lots of money. Yeah. Great song. Perfect use. I absolutely love that scene, and that's where Henry is like, hey, Sean.
Yeah, and this is great. So he pulls Sean. He's like, yeah, what's going on? He's talking. He goes, I've been a detective for
You're easy to find, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's, again, like, he's all flustered. He's trying to get, you know, advice from Sean, while from this point on, Gus is a douchebag, he's supposed to be because he's you know, elbows deep. He's knee deep in the model game, you know, if you will, at this point. So they all take off and Sean's trying to catch up with them. And by the time he breaks free of Henry, you know, they're all gone. So he calls Gus and Gus has got his model face on. And I love this. And he's, what happened? And Gus goes, well, some of the other models got creeped out that you hang out with your dad so much.
We were going to catch wrinkles.
Yeah, I love that. The way he says it, too, we were afraid we're going to catch wrinkles. So and good. Then it was just like, Gus is, you know, he plays, you know, that role perfectly. Like, you want to just kind of, you know, punch him in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a bad friend in this episode. Like, he's just, like, not there for Sean when Sean needs him. But that helps elevate Sean's game, you know, game a little bit when it comes to, you know, solving this case. So, you get that scene. And then you cuts to Chow Bella headquarters, you know, where we're introduced here to the mousy assistant, Emily Bloom, who, as I said before, cute as a button, great little British accent, just heart's a little aflutter, you know, when she's on screen. And this is where we sort of learn, this is where the episode does another thing really well, is they plant a lot of seeds, right? They they did it with the microphone stand. So they plant the seeds that, you know, Emily Bloom, you know, she's the assistant. She's being taken advantage of. She's overworked. She's not appreciated. So that when the time comes, there's, you know, probable cause, or at least, you know, good reason to suspect her when things really start to go sideways in this episode. So, we get that here. And then we also get another little nugget of information that Chalbella comes in and she accuses one of the models of having an affair with her late husband. And so, okay, now maybe it's one of the models, right? So you're watching this show from a procedural standpoint, you're thinking, okay, we got a couple of suspects here. We don't know which direction they could go in, but they've set it up so they could go one way or the other.
Yes.
And they end up going
one piece that Gus actually got out of the night by ditching Sean.
True,
and
right.
He was like, oh, I learned Belinda liked, you know, whatever and whatever. And he's like, also I learned that Chabelle has been grilling all of the models because one of them was having an affair with Gregor.
So now we cut over to Gregor's funeral. And again, like a lot of these scenes, like you get good chuckles, like they're not that next level, but this was just a great little scene because all the models, they're all real snarky bitches.
Oh, yeah.
Male models, female models, right? So as they're walking by the caskets and sort of saying the last things, they're all saying something bitchy. You know, like, I was the one who peed in the pool, you know? Oh,
that's my guy again.
But one of the models who's an absolute fucking, like, just miserable bitch throughout the entire episode, Sigrid, however you pronounce her name.
Is that Cossack? Die.
Die. I mean, she did it perfectly, too. Like, she just, Sean notices that she puts a love note in his casket. So now we've sort of figured out, okay, that's the model that was having an affair because she's the most emotional one there. She's the, you know, and slipping that note in there, that's a love note. Gus, that's a love note. And then, you know, Chalbella gets up there, you know, she kind of gives this little, you know, speech. And then
I love more than anything when she's like, whose real name was?
Oh, yeah.
Gregory Lapansky.
Yeah, right.
Instead of Gregor Uberstein. That kills me every time.
So, but she, like, there's that sense of, like, she knew he was having an affair, so she's a little angry. But then she goes and plants a smooch on him, which was kind of weird. Like, on the lips.
Yeah.
You know, not like a grief-stricken, you know, like, okay, which would be weird enough. But she, like, plants one on the lips, and then she just sort of collapses.
Yeah, and the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, this seems so stupid because somebody probably put, like, poison on the lips and that's how she died.
Right.
And that's not at all what happened.
Yeah.
I guess she just wanted to kiss her cheating husband on the lips one more time. It was so weird that she did that. I found that weird, too. But I was so glad it wasn't, like, Sigrid poisoned the lips.
Right.
Because that would have made no sense to kiss somebody like that. She just did it because I guess she's a weirdo.
Yeah, because who would have, like, someone would have had to have gone in on there after the fact and done that. And but they do give, you know, again, that's a good seed that they plant to sort of give you some misdirection. Mm-hmm. A lot of misdirection in this episode, which, you know, we usually get a little bit of in Psych, but, like, it was done really well here.
All over the place. Hard to predict. Hard to call. I think this was... we've done this a few times now in this season where the crime is a little higher than the comedy.
Yeah.
And I would put this in that category, but I think the crime is very good in this one, so I don't mind.
Yeah, exactly. It was a great story. And so, you know, with Chalbella dying, you know, there was a brief moment where she was sort of considered a suspect because she stood to take over the company. You know, so, you know, spouse is always a suspect in these things. But because she's dead, obviously she's no longer a suspect. So, you know, you're back at the station now. They bring Sigrid in because, you know, she gave the note, you know, to Gregor. She was having the affair with him. So now she becomes a plausible suspect, right? But, you know, she, you know, during the interrogation reveals that, you know, Emily Bloom, and it was actually third in line, whereas from an outward appearance, it looked like she was just a mousy assistant, and that was just the way they treated her. She was actually third in line, and she never disclosed that information to anybody. So that is sort of a bit of a red flag. So now, again, we've got some motive now. Way she was treated, she was third in line. She sort of withheld that information. So now we have, you know, what we think is, you know, our prime suspect. And they did a really good job of making you really believe that up until, you know, the very end. And it's further, you know, cemented in the following scene here where they're back at the office and Gus is doing his whole model thing. And Sean notices his shirt that he's wearing, because I think Gus says something to the fact of, oh, this was gifted to me, that, you know, Gregor. Yeah, he made this. And Sean had noticed that the design was that of Emily Bloom's, because when they were talking earlier, right, he noticed all her sketches.
Yeah, because he went in there. There was a little chemistry sparking off, and, you know, she had just come off her lunch break at, like, what, 9 o'clock or whatever, saw that she was worked to the bone, thumbed through the sketches, and was like, oh, I've never shown these to anyone, where clearly she showed them to Gregor. He stole them, took them as his own. So Sean's ears are up immediately at that and probably is like, all right, she, as much as I think she might be cute, because you can tell there was sparks flying,
yep,
she might be the suspect now, because if somebody stole all your stuff and passed it off as, like, the greatest thing ever, you'd probably be pretty pissed.
Yeah, and so Sean shares this information, you know, and I think Jules, doing her due diligence, went over to Chow Bella to talk with Emily, and we get a great little scene here where there's great chemistry between Emily and Jules, where Emily has Jules try on those bright red pumps, and Jules is just head over heels. But when they're talking, right, you know, Jules' gut tells her this isn't, she's not the killer. I don't believe she's the killer. But now we have this information where Gregor, you know, had stolen her, you know, her ideas, her design. Sean is more than adamant and more than convinced that she's the killer. But Jules is opposite. And what I loved about that scene, too, is Emily was like, just because you're a cop doesn't mean you can't dress to arrest. And so when we get to the police station, you get Jules walking into that station. I got to tell you, hubba. Hubba.
Yeah, this is the first time we've seen Jules all dolled up. And yeah, she's just wearing, like, you know, she's not wearing a pantsuit for once.
Yeah.
We can say that. She's wearing a nice skirt, you know, black all over. And she is she's beautiful. Just objectively a beautiful woman. So it was nice to see her, you know, kind of being like, you know, I'm a woman and a detective. I can do this. And I'm at some
favorite.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I loved it.
No, you can't.
And the look of Lassie, Sean, and Gus as she's, you know, they're all just like,
yep, all great acting right there. Fantastic. Yep. But, you know, she goes, you know, I don't think she's a suspect at all. I'd bet the farm on it.
Yeah. So now they all go to Chow Bella headquarters and they find Emily, and it appears that she too is dead.
Okay. Did you pick up on this Clue reference? Because obviously I did.
I did. So give it. I would have put it in the obscure reference notes if I had.
I'll see if I can cut it together. But there's a certain point in Clue where there's the third murder, and Wadsworth walks in and goes, three murders. And Sean does the exact same timing. And it's it's so subtle. And I don't know how many, like, maybe me and Steve fucking Franks and fucking James Roday, but I'll cut it together where he walks in and goes, three murders. And it's the exact same delivery as Tim Curry, who was on the show earlier.
Yep.
And that's why, like, this show, and I noticed it the first time it was on, like, the first time I ever saw this, because Clue's my favorite movie and has been for 20 fucking years, maybe even longer at this point. But, like, his delivery of that, I was like, that's a nod to Tim Curry. And I'd already seen Tim Curry, and they do a lot of the, yeah, but like three murders. It's just such a slight wink to Clue, but that's why maybe that's why I love this episode, because it gives me one of the more subtle nods to a show or a movie in a show ever.
So I didn't pick up on that, but that's awesome. Yeah, because there was a part of me too with this scene, like, because so they walk in and Emily's, you know, slumped in her chair. And they think she's dead. And then she kind of, like, you know, wakes up there at the end. So there's another part here where they did a good job where I'm thinking, okay, she did do it. She poisoned herself, but she purposely gave herself just the right amount where she wouldn't die, but it would appear as though she was poisoned.
Interesting.
Right? So that's where, you know, the first time I'm watching this episode, that's where my head's at.
Well, because she is a boss. When you see her, like, she played the mousy assistant to Sean. So I can see how that happened, because then when it's her company, she's walking around like, and we're walking now.
Yeah, and we're talking.
Boss.
Yeah.
Like, she's ready to do this, and she's trying to change the company for the better. So that's not a bad little swerve that I never even looked into.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, maybe she poisoned herself here. Mm-hmm. And then I was looking for in the reveal, how Sean put together that she actually poisoned herself and was the killer. But what we get is cuts to the hospital. They talk with Emily, and it becomes clear in that conversation that she, you know, her talk screen came back where she actually had higher amounts of poison than anyone else than Chalbella had in her system. So she's ruled out as a suspect. And then that sort of brings us to the reveal where Sean's like, I'm two-thirds of the way there. And then he puts it all together. So they're back at Chalbella. They're back at the initial crime scene. Where everyone's there. I forget what the premise is.
Basically their wake or whatever.
Yeah, right. Thank you. And so this might have been like the best, or not the best, but one of the best deliveries of a reveal. It was
the most stylish of all of them.
No doubt about that. And Sean, because Sean's got the button-down shirt that's opened up, and he's sashaying and sauntaying across the stage as he's giving his reveal.
Once again, wearing a button-down shirt.
Yeah, with like a white shirt underneath it.
He's wearing it completely open, which I guess is okay. But even still, like, now that's not – like, no one does that anymore. That's not a look.
That was and so –
And even then, like, it wasn't a look.
Mid-90s, late 90s kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so we get the reveal here, and so this is, I think, what I love most about the episode really was the reveal and how it was done and just how it all sort of unfolded. So the Who, it was both Gregor and Chalbella.
Yeah, they killed the killers. Each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the why is Gregor and Chalbella were approaching 10 years, their 10-year anniversary.
And that's when we get the video montage, which spouted Sean to be able to put it all together, because it's like, oh, he killed her because of that. Because if they divorced because he was having an affair, they'd have to split the marital assets right down the middle.
Right. And he didn't want to split his company, his assets, or anything. So Gregor wanted to get Chalbella out of the picture for that. Chalbella, in turn, wanted to kill Gregor because he was having an affair with her. Mm-hmm. So great motives for both of them, right? Very plausible, motives. Mm-hmm. We've seen many stories sort of based off these motives. Maybe not together, but no. Like it was very plausible. And that's what made this episode unique, was that they were each other's killers. And the reason why they ended up being each other's killers is the how. So, Gregor had been, his plan was to poison Chalbella's
fruit smoothie,
right? Yeah. The problem, she's bulimic. So she would constantly, she'd have the smoothie and then vomit it up. So she wasn't always getting the full dose. So it took longer for her to die, which gave her enough time unknowingly to then set up, her plan to kill Gregor, which allowed him to die first and then her to die second. And I just thought that was brilliant. I thought that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Emily she was drinking those smoothies because she was sick of eating pizza all the time. And so she was getting the full dose. That's why her talk screens were so high. And so I just thought, Billy, they nailed it. They gave you some great suspects, some very plausible suspects. And in the end, it was the two people that died that were the killers.
Yeah, it was kind of a double twist whodunit, and in the end, the two people who died. And my favorite part is Lassie being like, "You could have just called me. Could have been an email." Because the two killers, the people who were the vicious people here, are already dead. Like they killed each other. Case over. Like what are you gonna do? Like nothing. Like literally. Like, all right, that guy killed that guy. That guy killed that guy. They're both dead. All right.
Yeah.
I guess we're done here. Like, obviously, you'd have to do more research as a detective to make sure that's the actual thing that happened.
Right.
But I get Lassie's frustration, and I'm sure this is in the notes, but when he's like, do I come down to your work, Sean? He's like, do I come down to your work and interrupt you while you're doing your job? And Lassie just goes, all the time.
Yeah.
Well, that's like one of the I think that's why like this episode hits so well, because they're like pushing back the norms, and like Sean is not Sean in this episode. He's like the other guy. He's like, am I the only sane person right now? Henry's being weird. Gus is being weird.
Yeah.
It's just great. And I love that about this episode.
Yeah. 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 It was just a very, very, very steady episode, you know, all around. Like the moments were good. They weren't, you know, nothing was side splittingly funny, but you nailed it, right? It was a situational comedy that was really, you know, top notch. So, you know, like I said, you know, overall, you know, solid episode. Loved the red herring with Emily. I thought that was just maybe the, the show's sort of greatest strength, you know, that, you know, just, you know, the story in general, you know, it was good. The delivery of the reveal was fantastic. So with that, my friend, you want to take it to Thundercats Ho?
Ho! Yeah. I mean, so there was a lot of memorable moments. We touched on a lot of them. We didn't really hit Henry and Sue B at the restaurant, which is probably the only moment between the two of them we didn't touch on. But I absolutely loved this storyline. Yeah. I thought it was so good. Henry, Hank Spencer, just living it up, not giving an F. It was great. I also love at the very end where he's wearing the turtleneck because he has a hickey. Yeah. And like the rant that Sean goes on with all the insults. But him and Sue B there, and Sue B's acting there where she brings her own beer, she wants meat. Like, she is a minx. She's a carnivorous minx, and I love it.
Yeah, she's feeding him. Like, doesn't this taste better than some flaky piece of fish? And she shoves, like, steak in his mouth, right? She takes her shirt off, and she would, you know, tease out for the boys here. Those things were tremendous, and she's just bent over the table, and Henry's just like, she's in full kitty cat mode. Like, this is where I got the Jane Seymour vibes.
That's
here,
right? Good call. That's good call.
Right. She's, I mean, she almost even kind of looks like her a little bit.
Yeah, you know? I would give you that 100%.
And so, yeah, I didn't mention it before. Again, there was my fucking voice. I didn't mention it before because I really just wanted to discuss it here because, like. Just that Henry, like, this is what I was talking about, where sort of the secondary characters shine. And Henry, like, knocks his fork off the table. He's like, oh, I got to get up. And she gives this wry smile. He goes to a payphone to call Sean. That's where he says, I don't know, she's turned into a carnivorous mink. She's going to eat me right here. And then it goes silence because she comes in and shoves him into the bathroom.
That was weird.
Yeah. And just absolutely, you know, fantastic. And we get some good lines here from Sean. You know, like Sean and Henry were really great in this episode throughout this, where you know, one of the things he said, he goes, he's dad, she saw the inside of your house and didn't run away. Like, I just thought that was a great line.
Oh yeah. And then all of the you know, why are you dressed like Perry Como?
Yeah. unless you plan on taking her back to Wayne Manor, ditch the turtleneck.
You're clearly about to go on an Old Spice shoot. Just fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Any scene with, you know, Model Gus, even though he was a terrible friend, he was just like, he just played that DB role, you know, fantastic. So well. Yeah.
We already touched on the pillow fight. Which was
the hilarious. Male models were great. Even when they were getting interrogated, they were hilarious. Just, you know, just that dumb, like, IQ of fucking mayonnaise sort of.
Honestly, Hassenpfeffer was in the running for my character, like my favorite. person, like, he's the blonde guy. He's
I thought about it as well, but you know, so speaking to that, you know, my favorite character was Henry. I can't believe it. I'll probably never say that.
Oh no, you will. You
maybe
will.
Santa Barbara Town, but in the finale. But I loved Henry in this episode.
Hank Spencer killed it, top to bottom, T to B. He was fantastic. like just the what's I'm asking for some basic dating protocol here.
Yeah.
Like everything about him in this episode shine. Sean was really good, and I love the role reversal of Sean in this episode. And I think that's why I love this episode so much. Because anytime Sean is not Sean, I think the episode stands out a little bit more. Like Sean 2.0 is one of my favorite episodes, and that's where he's kind of like the down guy. And I think he in this episode is even like, am I the only sane person right now in the entire world? Because Chief Vic is caring more about the date between Sue B and Henry. Gus is all over the place. Henry's, you know, not all, like, he's on his side, but he's also like, kind of in his own world. You know what I mean? Like he cares more about, you know, his date than anything else. So Sean is the sane one here. And anytime Sean is like off foot, I think that's what makes it great. And Henry was so good to be like to put him in that position.
Yeah, and that sort of gets to the end of the episode too, where you know Sean and Henry are talking with you know each other, and we get some more man candor here. And you know Henry is very honest with Sean. He's like, listen, you know, like your mom's gone, right? And this is like the first time, like, maybe the second time, we get some real sort of conversation. Just you know, you don't really know anything about Sean's mom. It's just Sean and Henry. He's like, she's gone. You know, I am lonely, you know, going to, you know, seek out, you know, the company of other women. You have to be okay with this. And Sean's just like, no. Because what we'll come to find out throughout, you know, throughout the series, but especially throughout next season, is that Sean is very much, you know, part of the animosity between Sean and Henry stems from their divorce. And he is very much, a mama's boy. You know,
because he doesn't know the whole story.
He doesn't. And that's another great moment later on when we get that, you know, between these guys and sort of how their, you know, relationship, you know, develops. But and I think it was the mom that sort of tells him the truth there, you know, which was a great scene. But I mean, I just love that scene at the end because it was a little heartfelt, but it was awkward as hell too, which was great. So let's get into some of our favorite lines.
I mean, there's so many of the favorite lines from this one, but we already covered the I'm black. I'm ashamed for you and your family. I just love that.
Yeah. The cheat is the worst name for a pickup move in the history of man. You know, Gus is freaking.
What is it? Colonel Sugar Lemons?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Besides, I think Operation Colonel Sugar Lemons is a much better one for this place.
Yes. Oh, there was. So when we get to the. So I'll just mention this real quick. So, like, when they're at the funeral and they're all saying their snarky things, Gus says something. He goes, "You reap what you sow." And I couldn't quite make out what he says at the end. So I put the closed captioning on. And so, what the closed captioning gave me, I don't know if this is what he actually said or not, but said, "You reap what you sow. UA Steeb." And I'm like, what the fuck? I have no idea because I can't hear what, you know, I can't make out what Gus says. And that's legit verbatim what the closed captioning gave me. UA Steeb. I'm like, what? Okay. So that kind of cracked me up a little bit.
Let's give that a quick Google.
Yeah, right. But Sean, you know, also mentions I'm proud of the fact that I've never been in therapy.
It might be Uberstein.
Like Uberstein, there we go. Yeah, so I'm like, because I couldn't quite make it out, and I, Swaggins was talking to me while I was trying to, you know, type up these notes, and so I'm a little distracted there. And then, but the closed captioning said UA Steve. I go, well, that can't be right, but it's pretty damn funny. So you know,
it's Uberstein or whatever the hell his last name was.
Yeah. We got Gus. You know, he does the whole Pluto thing to Subi. You hear about Pluto?
Fantastic. Right? I gotta find my Pluto montage of all those Plutos.
Yeah, and then I love this. He's, you know, Gus is rubbing lavender oil on his head, and he goes, Belinda likes her men to shine.
Is this two straight episodes of Lavender? Was Lavender Gooms the last episode? Or no, that was the episode before that. Yeah. That was Lights, Camera, Homicide.
Right, yep. And then, let's see what else. Lassie, I would rather shower with a bear.
Oh, yeah. I think I used that at the end of our first montage for this show when I announced we were doing this.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously says you can't do that to Jules.
When, oh,
you know,
fantastic.
She talks about dressing to arrest. I love Henry. He's just like, should I take her to the Crab Shack, Willie's, or the Third Ward?
Those can't be real places.
Yeah. And then, Sean, I was wrong. She's a carnivorous mink, right? She wants to eat me right here. And then, and then Subi, right, doesn't have many lines. But a couple of really sexually charged ones where she says, I've been craving meat lately. And would you like me to butter your biscuit? I just love that.
She's fantastic. Steen Sealer, without a doubt.
Yeah, she was, like I said, you know, just tease out for the boys. Loved it. I mean, just, you know. Anywho, rein it in, Joseph. Cold shower, my friend. You know. So let's go over some of the running gags here as we hit down the home stretch here, Billy.
Oh yeah, I mean Lassie, terrible fashion. I absolutely love it. Yeah. The transient shivering in the night. he goes and gets a new tie, and everyone comments on it. Sigrid's even like, yeah, "Are you wearing the same suit and the same tie?" And he gets pissed about that.
Yeah.
And then I think he also, I forget what episode it is, and there's some reference to like, "I gave you that inside deal, racks and racks of $6 ties."
Yeah.
I gotta find.
Is it the one too where like Henry? It's where Henry gets all his Hawaiian shirts.
No.
The woman is stalking Lassie, the crazy little blonde chick.
No. That she's stalking Henry, and that's Simon's lover retreat.
Yes.
I think it might be the one where Sean gets shot, but it's definitely one where Sean like. I gotta find that line because that's a great line. But you know, obviously Lassie, terrible fashion, just you know, classic, you know. Detective just wearing regular suit, regular tie. But I absolutely love that.
And I love that none of the models would believe that, you know, that the gag, right, that Sean was actually a model, except for when Gus says, oh, he's a foot and ankle model. And they all go, oh, yeah, okay.
Some hand, you know, really. Remember this? He puts his hands up from the insurance. He's talking about
Allstate. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Gus is nicknamed Tan, right? Loved it. That was a
or
running
Tangus.
Gag. Or Tangus. Right there at the end. Did you see a pineapple?
I did not see any pineapple.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, you know, order of these things sort of being, you know, shot and then sort of because there was a stretch there. We were getting some really solid pineapple, you know, placement and then almost seemingly none. So where they shot and then just, you know, released out of order. But a couple of obscure references here. We get a Blue Steel Zoolander reference from Sean. We get a couple of Judy Blume references. also when Henry's wearing the turtleneck, he makes a Steve McQueen bullet reference, which is a great movie, by the way.
I've
never watched it. And then obviously Batman, when he says, unless you plan on taking her to, back to Wayne Manor, loose up the black turtleneck, you know, which is, I think an homage to either Clooney's or Kilmer, probably Kilmer. If I had to guess, Batman, because I think he wears a black turtleneck, you know, in that movie. Yeah. But what's your rating for this one, Billy?
I'm going to give it a 7.3. I really enjoy this one. I like whenever Sean's out of his element. Again, not laugh out loud funny for the most part, but there were a few parts still every time that I watched it and probably legit at least minimum 4 full times today that made me actually LOL a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. So you and I have this episode and the last episode, you know, backwards. So I gave this one a 7.1. So it kind of makes sense. I like last week's episode a little bit more than you did. You like this one a little bit more than I did. So, again, very, very solid, you know, episode, you know, all around. So for next week, Billy, come on, son.
So next week we have... And again, like I thought this was one of my all-time favorite episodes, you know, Sean and Gus, Crime of Fashion. Next week is Sean and Gus of the Dead. I love that episode, too. We get, you know, a little bit of smooth Sean here as well. A lot of, you know, future building stuff for arcs in this series. We get, you know, Interim Chief Vic's last day as Interim Chief. I'll be very excited to see how I feel about this episode. So... that's going to be really good to watch probably, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times next week.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen this one. So I'm looking forward to rewatching it. So, and that's the season finale. So we're closing in on the end of season 2 here. So we'll do this and then we'll do, you know, we'll have our season 2 recap where we will hopefully have a guest to join us as well. Talk about that. And then we'll, you know, we're going to get knee deep into season 3 before you know it.
Joseph, if my math serves me correct, we're 25, almost 25% of the way through here.
Wow, we're cooking, baby. We're cooking.
Right? 2 seasons, 8 total. If my math is right, that's 1 out of 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
25%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'll do a deep dive on the movies and the musical when it happens. And then we can, you know, deep dive for years after on anything we want. And we got to start trying to see if we can get. You know, at least Steve Franks on an episode. Somebody.
Yeah, we'll make that happen. We'll make that happen for sure. So, Billy, where can the people find us?
They can find us just about everywhere. We are on TeePublic. We have the Pineapple Boys. Well, you know what? I'm gonna make slap it on the biscuit and pineapple hashtag them Pineapple Boy shirt as well. So you can find us there. You can find us on the hashtag Dork Shared Gooniverse on Facebook, on Twitter. We may get our own Twitter soon. We are on IG. Then you can find all of the other podcasts everywhere as well. Let's see, TLDR. Get Help a Loki podcast, and the Big Boys of Dork, Mac and Goo. Then you have TLDR and PCP. Then you have the streamers, Shime Time, Dr. Joe himself right here. And then Arvon D, he be twitching as well. Did I get everybody?
Did we get the Change My Mind Boys?
Did I say them with me? No. I talked about both Fryer and Wes in their other podcasts, because who doesn't have two podcasts? Rossi and Mac?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, and Davey and Keith.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, half of us are you know, working overtime, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But until next week, Billy, wait for it.
Frank says aye.